Ken Paulson from Americana Music News, and today we've got our special guest, Tim Easton, who's got a fascinating new project involving his beloved guitar, and we'll get a chance to talk about that very shortly. In the meantime, it's just good to have you here, Tim. Welcome.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me.
I know you're a Nashville resident now. When did you move back to Nashville?
I never lived in Nashville until about 6 years ago, but I always came there to record. I grew up in Ohio, and I made my first records in Nashville. Brad Jones got me down there. I played South by Southwest way back before CDs. I was passing cassettes out, and passed out a cassette and ended up working in Nashville. So I started making records in Nashville a long time ago, but moved there about 6 years ago.
Brad Jones has been in on a lot of very good people's starts. You know, he's a fine producer.
And, yeah.
But you talked to a lot of people who were early on that, you know, a breakthrough record was always Brad Jones had something to do with it.
Right, and I would be remiss not to mention his business partner, Robin Eaton, who owns now Club Roar next door to Alex the Great, which is Brad Jones' studio in the Berry Hill there. And that is where I've made many records too, including a couple years ago I made put out an album called American Fork, which was quite the Americana gig there, because it went up, you know, I had the radio campaign, had all that stuff going, so I traveled a lot, you know. Yeah. And supporting that record,
that was a great record, and probably my favorite of yours.
Thank you.
I am also partial though to the rock and roll record Not Cool.
Yeah, that's my favorite. And because people ask me, and I'm like, I have to be honest. Let me be honest with it 1 second. Oh, yeah, that's the one. That's the one that when I would finish a gig, no matter what, I would, and someone asked for like a record, I'd always like, this is your record. This is the one for you. And I it's out of print now. You know, I don't have any. I don't have any on CD, and I don't have any on, I'll have to check in with 30 Tigers and see how we're going to proceed, because I'm not going to bootleg myself just yet.
Right.
If someone else wants to, well, let's talk about that. But I'm really proud of that record because it was really fun to make with Brad Jones and Robin Eaton. And it took like 2 or 3 days, and we had fun, and it was just so easy, you know.
I saw some reference to Robert's Western World. Is that?
Yeah, I saw some musicians there playing, and I just thought to myself, I'm going to hire those guys, and I'm not going to tell them what to do. I'm just going to play my songs like Sun Studio style, trio with an upright bass and electric guitar, and they just do their thing to them. These are 3-chord country songs or country blues, and I never told them what to do. And that's the great thing about living in Nashville, that you go down to Kroger and get a pedal steel player who you've loved for many records, and you don't have to tell them, hey, these are the chords and this is how it goes. They just play the song, and they've made records before, and they'll figure it out. And you hire them because you trust and love their musicianship, and it was so easy.
For those of you who have not been to Nashville, Robert's Western Wear is not a men's clothing store.
Yeah.
it once was, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a honky-tonk, and it's where BR549 basically resuscitated the city in the mid-90s.
Saw him.
And, you know, when people talk to me about Tootsie's and other locations on the street, I always send them to Robert's.
Me too.
It's cool. People, it's authentic. Great. The locals come out and dance. It's a great thing.
Like Joshua Headley says every Monday night, or he plays every Monday night, and like he says, you're not going to hear any Journey songs here. Nothing against Journey, but they play old country music there. Vintage country music, and you know, you might hear something from George Strait, you know, you might hear something from the 80s or 90s, but that's to me is, you know, country music compared to we all know the story. We got to thank those of our Nashville new friends like Jason Isbell and etc. for Margot and our man from Kentucky for changing yet another sea change in Nashville. And it's wonderful to be there for that.
You know, I was struck by looking at your solo career. You must be a charming guy, because the people who've gotten to play on your records, no jerk gets these people. Here's a little roster. Of course, you had Ken Coomer and John Surratt and Jay Bennett, Wilco. You had Mike Campbell. You had Jim Keltner,
yeah.
Lucinda Williams, Tift Merritt, Kenny Vaughn, of course, and more recently Aaron Lee Tastian. It's got to be a trip to have Keltner on drums.
It is, but I want to say these are professional musicians that work for a living too. It's, you know, look at Keltner's, you know, All Music Guide or whatever. Check it out. Like, look at all the guys he's played with. But yeah, it was great to be with him. He's a working musician, like a lot of my Nashville buddies, and they take sessions. You know,
right?
Kenny Vaughn's a classic example, and you know, some guys have representatives that tell you, you know, this is what it costs. Like, you know who wasn't on there? The McCrary sisters. Uh-huh. You didn't mention that. So I worked with them, and like, they have a rep, you know, and stuff, but it all works differently. But you know, these people work. This is what they do for a living. So if you can write a tune and carry a tune, you get to work with some greats, and I've been really lucky. I won't deny that. Lucinda Williams mentored me, and my God, you know, how great it is to really actually sit there and learn from the best in poet and melody and stuff like that.
I wasn't assuming they were giving you a freebie, but there's a melding, especially in Nashville. You don't always pay the market rate. You know,
there's sliding scale, of course. Yeah. And that's, you know, some have union, some have, this is what it costs. Jim Keltner is a different gig, man. He's played on so many hit records. He's a, you know, his rate's a little different, but you know, everybody's rates change though, you know, over the new thing in Nashville now, it's incredible. I tell people, I go, don't have some stupid idea in your mind about, oh, going to Nashville and make a record. It's like, it's a great place to make a record. There's great musicians and a ton of great studios. And you know, because there's so many, the rate has kind of gone down a bit, you know, and it's so, we want to work, you know. I also am a hired gun, by the way. Like, you know, European cats will send MP3s over, and I can just play a dobro part to it in my own home studio. So yeah. I love it.
Well, when I make my first album, I'll think of you.
Man, what a lucky way to make a living. Yeah. I dig it. You know, it's like I feel really fortunate that I can wake up, have some coffee, and play on somebody's song because they like what I do, and it's nice.
Well, I'm struck that... like Nat Cool is a pretty good example of this. You pretty much do what you want. You've done the same thing with your new album, which is strikingly different and as simple and basic as it comes. And it's called Paco and the Melodic Polaroids.
This new one is the way of like, okay, I am actually, we're going to get right into self and guitar and just cut out all the middlemen and all the... producers. There were two engineers helping me make this record, Clint Holly and Dave Paulson of Cleveland, Ohio, who opened up a studio in Bristol, Virginia, right around the corner from where the Bristol sessions were made with Jimmy Rogers and the Carter family. There are similarities in my records, and that similarity is my voice and my poetry or my lyrics. But with this one, the new thing was, oh, why don't you make a record that's just you and your guitar, so that when somebody sees you after a show and you've played solo acoustic and they say, I want what I just saw, I've never heard you play before, then I can actually hand it to them.
Cool.
And then I thought to myself, well, do you want to go to tape, you know, to get all the acoustic out of it you can? And I thought, well, yeah, that's a little bit fussy and quite frankly out of my financial range right now. You know, I'm going through some intense stuff in my life, personal stuff. And I thought, I'm going to make an album directly to lacquer the way, and I've been thinking about it for a while. And then Neil Young went and did it at Jack White's place. Right, he did it in the booth. Right. So I went in the booth and I cut a couple records in there, played them over, you know, the stereo. And I thought, well, it's cool. It sounds old. It sounds vintage, but it's a little bit too much. And then I noticed that other people were recording straight to lathes, like with in an engineer setting, the way they would have done it in Bristol, Virginia 90 years ago for the Bristol sessions, the way Jimmy Rogers would have cut his first records and the Carter family, mono, one microphone, straight to lacquer. And like, that's happening now. Bands are doing it and it's going on, but not many people have made entire records that way. And so I pitched my idea to the engineers and they said, let's do this. And they run this place called the Ernest Tube in Bristol, Virginia. And you traveling songwriters out there, listen to this. You want to record direct to lacquer? Go to the Ernest Tube. They got one you know, these lacquer discs have 15 minutes on them. So one disc, 15 minutes. There's no like, oh, hit stop and rewind. I'm going to start this song again. There's none of that. You just, you got 15 minutes and you're going to sing your song. And then they lift the cutting needle off of it. And when you're done with the song, and then you got maybe 10 minutes left on it. And then they drop it down and you sing the next song and lift it up. If you mess up, it's either going to go on the record or you have to start again. So there's no like stop, rewind. Okay.
So how many of the album cuts were first takes?
The majority of them. Cool. There's a couple second takes. You know, when you look at Robert Johnson's thing, you know, you see that he's got, what, 17 tunes out there. And there's a couple two takes on his. Now, he's Robert Johnson, so it's a little different. In other words, it's like the birth of a thing, of a movement. But I do listen to those recordings, or I did for a while in my life. I listened to them quite a bit. And so, yeah, there are a lot of first takes. And,
well, I want to come back and ask you about Paco, but first, could you pick a song from the new album we could share with listeners right now?
You know, we might as well go with the very first song, the Old New Straitsville Blues.
Broke down again on Refugee Road with smoke coming out of the hood. And the man at the station says I might be broke down for good. Was high and so was I, between the smoke and the shine and the pills. I put my thumb out on Route 33, pull right through the Hawking Hills. And I get tired of these hard times, paying the traveler's due. I'm gonna settle down in a southern town with the old new Straitsville blues. Circleville to find me a girl or two. One of them wouldn't jump out of the fire, and I knew what I had to do. I put my knee down on the frozen ground. I stole that girl from town. Nobody cares to see my face when I come back around. And I get tired of these hard times, paying the traveler's dues. I'm gonna settle down in a southern town. Straitsville, old new Straitsville blues. Behind me, how many more to go? Last night somebody offered the jug. I said, no son, I've had enough of these hard times, paying the traveler's dues. I'm gonna settle down in a southern town with the old new Straitsville blues. Yes, I've had enough of these hard times, paying the traveler's dues. I'm gonna settle down in a southern town with the old new Straitsville. Old new Straitsville Blues.
That was the Old New Straitsville Blues off of the brand new Tim Easton album called Paco and the Melodic Polaroids, which brings us to Who in the Heck is Paco?
Paco is the nickname that was given to my guitar. In 1991 or so, I was living in Paris, and I was a street musician there. And this band came through town called The Grateful Dead, and they were there. And I didn't go to the show, but a lot of people were there in town to go, and a lot of them stayed at my apartment that I had. And one of them, an old friend, he said, hey, does your guitar have a name yet? And I said, no. He goes, Paco. So, yeah, Deadhead named my guitar in 1991. I've had it since 1987, so 30 years now. I bought it for $100 and two no-name electrics on trade. And written a lot of songs on it, recorded a lot of songs on it. And I decided to kind of celebrate my relationship with that guitar, too. That was another aspect of the idea of doing something different for a record, and that was to make a record of traveling songs with me and just one instrument. Right. You hear the harmonica, you hear my foot stomping, but that's it.
Wow. And would you, given the experimental nature of this, is this something you'd ever attempt to do again, or is that one more thing you've checked off your list?
Yeah, I've thought about it. Of course, the minute I finished, wrapped up that album, I began work on the next one in my head.
Right.
And so I have some ideas for the next one, and it involves a live band, perhaps all acoustic, meaning, because drums are acoustic instruments, a piano is acoustic instrument, and an upright bass and an acoustic guitar. But a lot of rock and roll can be made, a lot of racket. You know, I like to think of some of those Stones tunes, too, that are acoustic songs, but they still rock. Because they might have a big gospel choir or, you know, big vocal thing on it or attitude or something. So that's where my mind is right now. Is it doesn't really matter what production ideas I might have. Because if I'm going to go to work with a producer, you have to be willing to say yes and discuss ideas and try to make the best work you can, which I'm, you know, over these years have learned to get better at it. I think I'm getting better. The music I play, luckily, kind of get better with age. And, you know, I it all depends on the songs, right? I've got about, I'd say if I had to start making this record tomorrow, I could. But I'm still waiting on a couple more different tunes which are coagulating and percolating and I'm writing all the time. I'm a Nashville guy that writes quite a bit, either spitting it into my phone or physically writing it down.
Beyond the percolating, what else do you plan for 2018?
A lot of traveling. I'm going to go to Alaska. I'm going to go to Japan in May. I'm going to go around Europe in the fall. So I'm a working musician, working traveling musician. I am a troubadour. That's I take that, you know, seriously now, and it's what I do to make a living, and also what I enjoy to do. So I got asked this week what my dream job would be, and I was like, "What? I'm doing it," you know. And it was a nice reminder of that, and to be grateful that I get to do this.
Yeah. Well, that's valuable perspective, and we want as many people as possible to hear Paco and the Melodic Polaroids. So. Thank you, first of all, for your time, Tim Easton. And could you pick one more song as we go away here?
Yeah, I'm going to pick what would be the first song on side two, which is track number 6. This is a song I wrote walking around the hills in Whites Creek, Tennessee, and purloined this from an old traditional number, kind of purloined the form, and I did the folk process on it. And I wrote this tune here, this flat-picking song in open C called Broken Hearted Man.
Here's Tim Easton and Paco.
I walk away up high in the highest hill for to ease my mind. Walk way up high in the highest hill for to ease my troubled mind. Way up on the highest hill, I not see your low kind. I'm a broken hearted man. I crossed through the falling water and my feet got soaking wet. Through the falling water and my feet got soaking wet. I wandered and I wandered, but I ain't stopped walking yet. I'm a broken-hearted man. A broken-hearted man has no one left to blame. Broken-hearted man hangs his head in shame, in shame. Darling heartbreaker, how do you sleep at night? Darling heartbreaker, how do you sleep at night? We all pick the poison that helps us to sleep tight, sleep tight. I'm a broken-hearted man. A broken-hearted man has no one left to blame. A broken-hearted man hangs his head in shame. Broken-hearted man still calls out your name, your name. I lost your trail in the dark of the night, and it brought me to my knees. I lost your trail in the darkest night, and it brought me to my knees. Praying for your happiness so I can find some peace, some peace. I'm a broken-hearted man. A broken-hearted man has no one left to blame. A broken-hearted man hangs his head in shame. A broken-hearted man calls out your name, your name. I walk away up high on the highest hill for to ease my mind.
Americana Music News is brought to you by Sprinter Media. You can reach us at sprintermedia@comcast.net.